Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and I'm so jazzed to be talking to you all about system-built construction that we've had so many episodes leading up to this one. And as we become what we hope to say someday is experts in what we call system-built construction, we got to cast that net and go out to people who have been living it for a while and talking about how we move construction forward, about systems around building and all these different taglines around that. And today we get the pleasure of having Daniel Small and hearing his story that led him to being a leader when it comes to system-built construction. And so my main message today is that system-built construction is the future. But the question I want to talk about is, why are some people resistant to this change? And I'm hearing so much about people are wanting to make that change, or are they just needing assistance on this, right? And so how this is going to benefit you is, let's bring an expert who has been guiding the industry insider. So he's been inside the tent when it comes to all these terms of traditionally kind of the catch-all word is modular, or you hear a lot about offsite or volumetric, where you're taking panels and systems and bringing full volumetric boxes. The list goes on and on and on, right? But let's talk about how we can bring the quote-unquote outsiders who have not been part of this and the insiders together, that we're all flourishing and working together, that we call the Art of Construction Master Facilitators Group. So my perspective is that system built is so exciting, but Tribe, we're just dipping our toe into the water, right? So let's go take some people that have been doing this for a while and bring an industry expert into the fold. And let's talk about how we can overtake crusty contractor. On our pre-interviews, I loved how Daniel was challenging me of like, okay, when you say builders, what do you mean by that? And it's like, well, the catch-all is builders, the doers that we call the master facilitators. The other side of the fence is who we are not. We call talk about crusty contractor that is resistant to change. We don't want them to be part of this because, quite frankly, they're the ones that can be holding this back. And we are ready to move this thing forward through the Art of Construction Master Facilitator community. So without further ado, let's get out to know Danny Small's story with Da Vinci Consulting and have as much fun as possible. Lock and load, Tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
My favorite beverage is probably pretty plain vanilla, but I just like to go with like flavored waters. I like to sample different types of flavored waters. I'm a pretty basic kind of guy when it comes to beverages, just whatever hydrates my body.
Awesome. There you go. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
So I had the opportunity when I was a young man at the age of 19 to spend 2 years in Japan.
Oh, wow.
And I loved it. It was amazing. I don't think I had ever gone outside the country before then. But to be able to spend 2 years in a culture that was completely different from what I had ever experienced was an amazing adventure for me. So Japan would have to be the top of my list.
Awesome. 2 years. Give us one story or one memory from that.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm 6'2". And when I was there, I fluctuated in my weight from 240 to 255. I actually started out at about 195. Anyway, I was a big guy. And as you can imagine, in Japan, I stuck out like a sore thumb being this big Caucasian guy wearing a suit and riding bicycles around. And one time I came around a corner and just ran smack dab. I was hurrying on my way someplace and ran right into this old Japanese guy on his bicycle. Our front tires just met perfectly. We both flew off our bicycles. I ended up taking him back about 5 yards and landing on top of him. I thought I'd killed him. I jumped up real quick, lifted him up. He was in complete shock, and turns out he was alive, but our bicycles were just munched. The front forks were bent back, and so they wouldn't ride. And he was all distraught and freaked out. And I was still in a hurry, but I wanted to help him out. So I sat down on the ground and grabbed his bicycle and grabbed the fork and put my feet on the back of the bike. And I just yanked the fork forward to put it back into shape so he could ride it. And his eyes were just as big as saucers. He thought that he had, you know, encountered some kind of alien. And then I jumped on my bicycle, did the same thing to my bicycle, jumped on it, and we rode away. And that's the kind of cultural clashes that I had on a regular basis in Japan. It was awesome.
Well, there you go. You're definitely a guy that I can tell wants to get it done. And when it comes to system built construction, if there's a, you got to keep fighting, right? What do you like to do outside of what we're coining as system built in the construction arena? What do you do outside of that, that we passionately call the art of construction?
So probably my biggest hobby is I'm a big college football guy. I played football in college. I graduated from Brigham Young University, and they're my team. So I love following them. I love taking my son to games every year. We try to get to at least one game. And so I'm a big college football guy, and BYU is my team.
Awesome. Well, we got to know a little bit about you. What is your story that led you to starting DaVinci Consulting?
So, yeah, I actually kind of fell into construction. I started off out of college, went into business with my brother, built a small startup in ink manufacturing, of all things, but then moved on when I realized that being in business with my brother was not great for my relationship with my brother. So I took off, decided to do some other things, went up to the Northwest, and that was right when the dot-com recession hit. And so I spent about 2 years unemployed up there. It was pretty awful. But eventually a friend of a friend took mercy on me and gave me a job as a laborer for his semi-custom home building company up there in the Portland metro area. Started off digging ditches. I remember digging ditches in the soaking rain in the middle of the night in outside of Portland, and promising myself that I would get out of this industry as quickly as I possibly could. Well, 22 years later, I'm still here. But along the way, I eventually went into sales and marketing for that company, took over their sales and marketing operations for two of his companies. And along the way, got trained in building science, did design and consulting in that, and then migrated over to building products. So I actually worked for Pella Windows and Doors for a time, built another couple of startups in high performance building systems, insulation, wall systems, windows, etc. And then the Great Recession in 08, 09 took that business out. So I moved on to consulting, did some consulting out east, and ended up with CertainTeed Corporation. And I was in charge of their cross-functional or cross-group innovation. So I helped to manage their innovation projects for their multiple groups out there. Got my MBA at Villanova in 2015 and decided to go back into consulting. So I worked for a couple of small consulting firms. Along the way, while I was at CertainTeed, I discovered offsite construction and I instantly fell in love. So my undergrad degree is in mechanical engineering, and I think offsite construction just really appealed to the engineer in me. It just made total sense. And I immediately started wondering why we've been doing construction the way we've been doing for so many centuries, and wondered, why everybody doesn't do this. So I've been a huge fan and advocate of offsite construction ever since then. When I got my MBA, went into consulting, tried to kind of cater to offsite construction, but that wasn't within my control. So I just did as much as I could, but I did strategy and innovation for GCs and trade contractors and things like that. And then when the pandemic hit in 2020, I got downsized and I thought, well, this is my perfect opportunity to hang out my own shingle and start my own thing so I can actually focus on offsite construction. So around that time, I got certified as a Lean Six Sigma Black Belt to kind of formalize my training and experience in process optimization and manufacturing from my engineering background. And so I went whole hog into focusing on offsite construction and helping players in offsite construction, all forms of offsite construction, to be more efficient, to optimize their processes. I noticed that offsite construction has great promise, and it's on paper, it's amazingly superior to traditional construction, but a lot of them are really not fully optimizing their opportunities for efficiencies. So decided to try to help these companies to, pull every bit of potential out of offsite construction that they could. So 3 years later, I'm still loving what I'm doing, having a great time working with some of the best companies in the industry and helping them to up their game when it comes to efficiency and providing value to the marketplace to grow the offsite construction sector.
Well, thank you so much for that background. It really helps shape the conversation, as you and I both have kind of similar backgrounds as far as kind of being in product or supply chain of the way it's always been done, but being able to be part of those innovation teams, it just pushes you right through. If you're actually paying attention to building science and getting certifications, like you talked about, offsite or system built is a key way to do that. You did talk about on paper, it makes perfect sense, but what is killing the productivity of moving offsite forward?
Yeah. So I don't know how much background you want, but you know, basically to really understand this, you have to kind of remember where offsite construction came from in the United States, right? It grew up from the post-war housing boom, which kind of took a left turn into manufactured housing and basically trailer homes, right? It kind of went down that path for a while and gained an unsavory reputation in the minds of the American public as something that's cheap and low quality. And then modular kind of cropped, you know, branched off of that. But we still are hindered by that reputation of cheap, low quality manufactured housing. And so we've got a real PR problem. So that's one reason why we're not growing as fast as we could. But another reason is that I think that a lot of these companies that have branched off of manufactured housing into modular, whether it be volumetric or panelized or pods or what have you, based on where they're coming from and compared to that, they feel pretty comfortable. A lot of these old school, or I call them the old guard of modular construction, right? I think a lot of them feel fairly comfortable that they are on the vanguard of construction, that they are on the cutting edge, that they are really leading the industry. And so I think I've gotten the sense that they've kind of just gotten used to doing things the way they've done them for about 30 or 40 years. And they haven't really taken the opportunity to truly industrialize and become and think like manufacturers, right? A lot of these companies have been doing kind of traditional construction under a roof for a long time. And now we've got a newer crop of manufacturers that are starting up with VC funds, et cetera. And they're starting to look at this from a robotic standpoint and starting to look more at this like a manufacturer. But most of the industry I've found still just kind of has held on to a lot of old methods and procedures and has not really grasped onto the idea of, you know, thinking like a manufacturer. So I think that's one of the biggest reasons why we're not fulfilling our full potential, is that we're just not being as efficient as we could be.
So wait, you mean these people that are just building the same stuff inside under a shelter is not state of the art, and it's this secret sauce, as show 217 Gary Fleischer talked about on the podcast, how do we evolve modular construction? He said it's been fascinating his whole career. He's been involved in this in a long time. And he said every factory he goes to, they say something like, well, you got to do the NDA and do all this stuff. And then every other one. And he's like, when do I tell them you're doing the same as everybody else that is so special and secret?
Yep.
And you can go back and listen to that show 217 that I think a lot of your timely principles fit into what the Mod Coach is doing. And you can go look at Ken Semler, where we did all these podcasts kind of stacking the different experts that are going out there to call a spade to say, at the end of the day, my experience, when you get in as a builder, when it comes to offsite construction, we're all trying to figure out efficiencies to save time and money. And we talk about how, if you do it right today, you can save time, but automatically they think that it's a lot cheaper right off the bat. And that those things are not hand in hand. So can you talk about how much money or time is wasted by builders using the traditional building methods? And I definitely think the two things we don't have enough of, time and money, they're not hand in hand from my point of view. What's your take to that?
Yeah. First of all, it's, you know, it totally depends on the builder, the location, the situation, you know, all the players involved, right? So money and time and how much is being wasted is completely variable based on those things. But I can tell you that way too much of both of those things are being wasted with traditional construction, right? I mean, there's been study
too much.
After study.
Okay. I agree with that. And I think that's just in construction in general, right? We're all trying to figure out to be better consultants to the art of construction and being master facilitators, like too much. Okay. So let's unpack that too much a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've all seen studies from folks like McKinsey, et cetera, that have broken this down, and they've talked about the fact that, you know, 80% of construction projects are over schedule. They're late, you know, 50 something percent of them are over budget, right? So, and the thing is, even if we were on budget and on schedule, which we almost never are, we'd still be wasting a ton of time and money because just the nature of the methods and the procedures and the processes that are used, that have to be used in an outdoor field-based manual process, is just grossly inefficient, right? But that's even if we were on budget and on schedule, but we're not, right? So we're wasting even more time than we should be, as far as if we were true to our plans that we make from the outset, which are still taking too much time and money.
I totally agree. And as you and I were doing our pre-interviews and blending our stories together, a lot of the common practice came back to like systems and building. That's why I call it system built, of putting that stuff together, because I think that's the key to moving this thing forward with many of the factories. You can go back to the episode with like Charlie Chup of Fading West, and he talks about, as long as you love white quartz countertop, we're your place. And we've been working with them day in, day out when it comes to windows and doors, trying to figure out this kit of parts that is this streamlined kit of parts. And I think there's a lot of value. And at the end of the day, systems and building, I totally agree with you on the PR problem. And that's why we're calling it system built and playing off of offsite and all these different words. Because when you say modular, it's modular and manufactured, are these very weird stigmatisms of people just don't understand. And by the time you get them educated, a lot of times it's too late. So you have to figure out how to kind of flip this thing upside down. So then once you do that, what's your take when you've been inside the trenches, when people are really doing this well, of whatever vertically integrated, how you crawl, walk, run, of just doing panels or trusses or full walls with integrated components like windows and doors, or full volumetric where it's a full box with everything in it? How much time does the builder or customer save? This is an impossible pin you down to just say that, like you rightfully so said at the beginning, it depends. But can you kind of just kind of unpack from your point of view when it's done right, when you're consulting your ideal client and your ideal client takes your consulting to the next level, can you talk about how the success stories work from that?
Yeah. So again, depending on the type of offsite construction you're talking about, whether it's 3D volumetric or 2D panelized or pods or even down to single trade prefabrication. Let's take volumetric modular as an example, because it's kind of the most extreme example of where we do the most activity in the factory offsite, right? And the key, the big cheat code, so to speak, that offsite construction has had all along is simply the fact that it's away from the site, right? Just doing that can save anywhere from 40 to 60% of schedule by virtue merely of parallel pathing the site work with the structure assembly, right? Because instead of having to wait for site work to be done before we even start to assemble any of the structure, we can start building that structure away from the site in the factory as soon as that site work starts. So we're collapsing schedule immensely just by doing that. Now, the interesting thing is that that doesn't require any type of efficiency from the offsite manufacturer, the factory, right? They can build that building exactly like it's built in the field, only do it in a factory, and still gain that schedule compression just because they're parallel pathing. And that is what many of the factories have been doing. They've been kind of enjoying that advantage of schedule compression due to parallel pathing, and in many cases not even realizing or bothering to go after the additional efficiencies that they could be gaining by then turning that factory into a true manufacturing process by using things like Lean and Six Sigma and waste reduction, continuous improvement, Kaizen, all these things that other manufacturing industries have been sectors have been using for 60, 70 years. We haven't adopted those things in our factories yet. And I believe that there is a whole additional chunk of efficiency and savings that can be gained by taking our factories to that next level and actually treating them like manufacturing facilities as they really can be. So I think we could take that 40 to 60% and stretch it to, you know, 50 to 80% schedule compression if we really take it to the extreme of efficiency.
So much gold there and so many visuals that the more you play this great game of business, when you go out and then bring these proven processes back into something, you can start really streamlining that stuff. And I totally agree. And I'm seeing so much of that happen when you get inside the tent with these different factories, the ones that are, you know, kudos to them that are putting stakes in the ground, that are moving this thing forward. But then once you put the stake in the ground, it's how to be nimble and change. So, you know, what is your kind of point of view or the evidence that time is the big issue, like in the industry, if we really want to niche in here to talk about how we can add the most meaningful change?
Yeah. So time, I believe, is a quite a bit bigger issue than money in construction for a couple of reasons or in a couple of different ways, right? In the commercial sector for commercial buildings, clearly the customer for those commercial buildings, whether it be multifamily or commercial office buildings or apartments or hotels or what have you, their whole thing, the reason they're in this game is to start to cash flow that property as soon as possible, right? Their whole pro forma and all their investments and everything is about how quickly can I start getting this building to start giving me money back, right? So everything, time is everything for those projects, okay? Now, obviously, money is not instant. It's not, they can't spend all the money because it still has to cash flow. But with any kind of reasonable budget as far as funds go, time becomes the biggest enemy at that point because, you know, you think about holding costs during construction and then there's time to revenue. Those items can mean millions, potentially tens of millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars to those owners, depending on the size of the project, just by saving a few months. And usually with that size of a project, we're not talking a few months, we're talking a few years that can be saved with a well-run offsite project. So in that sense, time literally is money for them, right? The quicker they can get that building done and habitable, the quicker they can start to get to revenue, which is the reason they're playing that game. As far as residential goes, for the residents, we all know about the housing shortage. We've got a global housing shortage in this on the earth everywhere. It's certainly present in the United States, but it's present everywhere else, right? We've got people. There are nearly 2 billion people in the world who have insufficient housing, right? These are people who are living in slums, who are victims of natural disaster, who are homeless, who are refugees and internally displaced persons. You add these people up, and I did an analysis on it a while back, and that's not counting the population growth that's projected over the next 15 or 20 years, right? We're projected to add another 3 billion people to this globe in the next 15 or 20 years, in addition to the people who are already here who don't have sufficient housing. So when you add all that up together, I calculated we would need to build about 95,000 housing units every single day for the next 15 years to be able to keep up with the housing needs that we have on this planet. And that's about 6.5 times the entire capacity of every builder in the entire world right now. So we've got a lot of speeding up to do in order to house the people in the world, both the ones that are here and the ones that are yet to come.
Well said. So the overarching umbrella is lack of affordable housing, right? And or attainable housing, in these different words about that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And system build, we believe, is the solution to that, right? And so we've now talked about these entry points of the time and money and naming conventions and, you know, that to where we really need the builders to run to this. And to do that, that's where we're hoping Danny and the team can come into our master facilitators and we can bring these different factories, offsite people coming together to fast track this thing through the master facilitators program. And this is the question, Danny, I'm so excited for you to talk with the Art of Construction tribe about, is because you've been inside the tent. You've been going to these factories, talking to the people who are not just thinking about getting into offsite construction. They're living it, right? And once you jump in, I've never heard anybody say, I built a offsite factory and it was just so much easier than I ever thought it was going to be. It's just so simple, right? It's never that, right? It's always the opposite, right? So what are some of the biggest questions or where you consult after they have jumped into system built construction?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I guess if I were to boil it down, it comes down to helping these entities to think and act like manufacturers, right? Because offsite construction is this weird mashup of construction and manufacturing, right? And the people that get into this space, almost all of them either come from construction with no manufacturing background, or they come from, and lately we've been bringing in some people from manufacturing, other sectors of manufacturing who have no background in construction, which is, in my opinion, better, because I think these factories need to, you know, be more similar to manufacturers than to construction builders, traditional builders. And then we've also got some people who are coming in who got no experience in either, right? Coming in from software and different things like that. So we're building this asset, but up until now or recently, we've had very few entrants into this industry or this sector who really have that mashup of experience and background. And so my biggest challenge is to help these companies to meld these two worlds. It's not pure manufacturing, because we're not making 100,000 widgets of the same description and specs. We're making maybe a few hundred modules. But on the other extreme, coming from traditional construction, where we're doing prototypes over and over and over again, we're doing one-offs every single time we build something. So this is bringing those two worlds together, where we're not doing one-offs, but we're not doing 100,000 of something. We're trying to create a system where we can efficiently build a systematized product that is efficient, with very little waste, with high productivity, and build them fast and still maintain high quality. Obviously, quality has to be there. That's table stakes. We've got to have the quality. I'm not too worried about quality, because offsite construction has been quite good at quality, and actually better, in my opinion, than traditional construction. But where we really lack is the speed, as we've been talking about. We've got to speed up. We've got to be able to build faster if we're going to house the people of this world and provide
Danny, when you go to these different factories, you're like me, where you don't go in there and be like, we're just making stuff so much faster and it's so much easier than I thought.
Yeah, you got to slow down. No, it's never that. That's never the problem. I've never once told a client they've got to slow down. It's always, and obviously some of them are asking for help with quality. They want to up their quality. They want to be able to track things better. And there are some ancillary issues as well. But without fail, the reason that people bring me in is they need to put out more product faster, and they need to do it with fewer resources, right? We've got, overarching this whole thing is a labor shortage that everybody is up against. Everybody is bumping up against this. They don't have the people to go as fast as they need to go to keep up. And so they've got this conundrum. They've got this catch-22 where, yes, we need to go faster, but I don't know how we're going to go faster because we don't have enough people to go faster. Well, what I teach people and what I help people to put into place helps them to go faster without having to hire more people, or at least not nearly as many more people as they thought they were going to have to hire. So it increases labor productivity so they can do more with less.
I absolutely love that. And we can't talk about that enough, right? Because that's the whole crutch of this whole thing, of where Danny and the team at DaVinci Consulting come in and make this whole thing happen. I really appreciate you taking the time today to come in and kind of shed some light, where we can't be talking enough about this PR problem, about system built construction and all coming together to do our part to manage this stuff. I'm curious your take that we always ask at the end is this podcast for builders and our affiliates to connect the right construction materials and technologies to the right handshakes. What is your crystal ball for the future when it comes to technology and construction?
This is a tricky question for me because I've got a complicated relationship with technology and construction. I've actually spent some time with a software company that specializes in offsite construction. And so that's where I get my love for it and my interest in it and my understanding of it. But at the same time, as a lean guy, I understand that there's a saying in lean circles that goes, don't automate your waste. In other words, do not add technology and automation to a bad process. If you do that, all you will do is quote unquote, automate your waste. You will just speed up the rate at which you lose money and put out bad product. And at very best, it will just act as a Band-Aid and mask the real issues that you have. So I have become a staunch advocate. This is a soapbox issue of mine. Yeah, I don't know if you can tell, but I always preach the gospel of fix your process first. Process always has to come first. Okay. Do not, and you know, this issue of inefficient offsite manufacturing is usually companies try to take one of two different approaches, and they often try to take both of them. They try to throw people at it, which is a non-starter because of what we just talked about, the labor shortage. You just, even if you could do it though, it would just add cost and complexity. So that doesn't work. The other pathway that a lot of companies are taking is adding technology. They'll try to put some software in place that can, quote unquote, make them more efficient. Or they'll try to add robots or some other automation that they think is going to make them more efficient. The problem is that if they don't fix their process first, it's just going to make things worse. It's going to complicate their issues and automate their waste, as I said. So really what I think we need to do is get to the point where we can have an efficient and optimized process, then gradually and sensibly add technology. I am not anti-technology. I love technology. My wife thinks I'm a little bit too technophilic, but I believe that it needs to be added in a sensible way. Once the process is in place and optimized, then you add it gradually. I think that, frankly, a lot of companies, not a lot, there are a few companies out there who have gone whole hog with the automation. I worry that they have bitten off more than they can chew and taken it too fast with automation. It's a very
and I want to chime in there, and I totally agree with that. And show 253 titled "The Key to Offsite Construction is Automation," where we talked with Dwight Morgan, who runs Offsite Tech out of Charlotte, and we went and toured their facility. But he comes from a background of automotive robots and seeing a lot of the lessons learned we've seen from companies like Katerra, that people got those robots for pennies on the dollar of the paradigm shift. He talked about if you can't automate a crappy process faster. Now you just have, and so that podcast, he really talks well about being careful of what you're, you know, don't put the square peg in the round hole. First unwind before you peel back the onion. I totally agree with that. Just like when you're talking about, you know, the one-offs or the prototypes, like Amy Marks, where we talked about, you know, her whole thing of platform of industrialized construction, building order out of chaos. Don't build snowflakes all day long. You have to put this stuff together. So I just want to put a couple other master facilitators into your talking points that you're spot on about. Don't automate a crappy process. And I see a lot of that stuff happening because then the logistics get totally blown out of proportion because of the cost ratios.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's a reason why, you know, a factory full of robots just doesn't necessarily fit with offsite construction, right? Again, we use automotive a lot as an example when we talk about automating and using robotics in construction, but it's not a great analogy because, again, in automotive, they're building hundreds of thousands of automobiles with slight variations. That's very robot friendly. Okay. And even Elon Musk has said that he went too far with robotics and dialed it back and went more manual because there are some things that you just can't replace a person with. In construction, again, because of the variability, it's not as robot friendly as, say, automotives or electronics manufacturing would be. And so I kind of preach a cautionary advice when it comes to automation, yes, I think there's a place for it, but I think there's a limited place and it needs to be done very, very smartly and judiciously.
Absolutely love all that. Thank you for that. And a lot of stuff we can unpack there over time in the master facilitators. But as we niche in, what is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it today and grow their business?
So if we're talking about people who are kind of on the outside of offsite construction, folks who are maybe in traditional construction and seeing all this buzz and wondering if it's something that they should bother with, I think that there are baby steps, right? I gave a presentation at IBS about this, about industrializing and getting into system-built construction or industrialized construction or offsite construction. One of those, pick your term, right? And there are ways that these entities can get into this piecemeal. And I recommend, you know, starting with just single trade prefab, you know, start using mechanical, electrical, plumbing contractors who prefab some of their assemblies, right? Start with that. I mean, we're all familiar with trusses and different component assemblies like that. So use that as a starting point, as a catalyst for expanding offsite within your operation. And just look at ways that you can introduce it piecemeal. You don't have to just go whole hog and just scrap your whole on-site business and just partner with a 3D modular factory and just buy everything from them. You can go piecemeal and you can wade into this gradually, because as you implied at the very beginning of the podcast, Devin, I truly believe that industrialization is the future of construction. It's going to be what we call just regular construction in 20 years. And there are going to be winners and losers. Those who get on board with the industrialization of construction are going to be the ones who survive and thrive in this new construction economy. Those who do not, those who resist, those who stick their head in the sand and say, I've been doing it this way for 30 or 40 years and it's worked fine for me, I'm sticking with what I know, those are going to be the ones, unfortunately, who will fade away into irrelevance and eventually die. We're going to have a completely different set of players in 20 years. That's my firm belief. It's not a popular song that I sing for many, but I believe in it just the same. So I think the biggest message I would say, give to these people on the outside looking in, is don't wait any longer. Find a way to get started, even if it's on a very, very small basis, because this is the boat that is leaving the harbor and you need to be on it.
I absolutely love it. And I love you sharing the real world acumens and putting that out there. Danny, thank you so much for being part of the Art of Construction and coming and sharing your story.
Thank you, Devin. My pleasure.
So much gold there. And the first word I want to put out there that I want some more education from Danny and the team and the master facilitators is parallel pathing. And at the end of the day, when we begin with the end in mind, we were kind of struggling of the words, because words matter, right? And at the end of the day, it's systems and construction that we call system built construction with the T, because we don't want to just talk about it here in the Art of Construction. We want to do it. Because if system built saves 40%, that's just right off the top that he talked about. And that doesn't include things like streamlining, like where you can have double shifts, which I've been working with manufacturers. And that's one of the pleasures of people like Danny and I have been in supply channel. You get to go see the dichotomy of what's being done out in the field and what's being done in the manufacturing facilities. You can do stuff so much better by putting the two together. And then you take experts like Da Vinci Consulting, and then you can actually come and you can adopt true Kaizen. And I didn't quite get that. Like, for example, you just start a business. I own a window and door company, and warehousing is expensive and it's not getting less expensive, right? So how do you get more efficient on product in, product out? And then you just think from the outside, you come in and be like, well, just throw a QR code on that or scanning or something, until you actually try to simplify that. And that's what he talked about, of don't automate a process that you don't have, because it just runs out ragged. And that's why the process. So when we talk about words matter, I want to kind of do some word mashups. And I liked, he actually used mashup, call it what you will, but making and doing, manufacturers and construction, offsite and onsite. They sound so simple, But all that stuff has to be broke out to understand system built. And we need builders that are, and it's so cool because we have builders, not just builders, hammers and nails, but builders coming with so many different things from different sectors. And I totally agree with them. They have to take lessons learned from things like building the same car chassis and look to say, we can do that in some type of housing. But so many things change how and what goes out the factory. And that's where we all have to come together as master facilitators. And we have to join each other to figure out, you know, how do we have Danny and others in the Art of Construction Master Facilitator to lead and help us with this greatest time in construction? So I leave you with this, Tribe, is don't be a prototype, because prototypes are one and done. Danny talked a lot about how we have to figure out how to do more with less, having less resources and more product. Well, if you do that on your own, I can tell you right off the bat, you're screwed. But if you join the movement where we're all doing that and we don't waste your time and we all come to be part of something bigger in this community, let's unpack this inside the community, like Danny talked about on the podcast. And system build is totally where it's at, but it's so much more than just building a box inside a factory versus framing up a wall on site. It's not one or the other. It's all the above, changing the way we do our processes. And so we'll put links to the show note for Danny and DaVinci Consulting. I love what his stuff. He's got all kinds of golden nuggets, a great ebook and all kinds of stuff that we'll put in the show notes to check out and get involved. And reach out to us if you want to have him back in the Master Facilitators group and bring some different factories and experts together. Because let's face it, not very many people are just leading with building their roof systems on site. Trusses have been happening for a while. Let's crawl, walk, run, and continue to take all that stuff to the next level, but put it to a connected kit of parts, because that's the future of putting this stuff together for dollars and cents. Crush it out there, Tribe.